carried.
Yep.
It's just some.
This will be passed around?
No, I just have one copy left, so.
What's that?
I just have one copy left.
Okay, so yeah.
But it's on the website. You can have it. Alright, so the next thing is the homework. I didn't hand out any homework last time and didn't mean for any homework to be due on Thursday. Though if you looked at the website and didn't come to class, you might think that there's homework due Thursday. I had just begun writing a homework assignment and left the due date 1 week from the previous one. So if you thought that, just relax. There's no homework due until next Thursday. And here's the assignment that will be due next Thursday. There are four problems on this assignment, and I'll say a word about each of them in a second. Alright, so, also, does anybody need notes from last time, since I printed up some extras in case you weren't here? So you do, and you do, okay, no problem, I printed up a couple of extras. It's just the part we're going to do today, so. But nonetheless, we should find it helpful.
Is this the next chapter there?
Yeah, chapter 10. Except it's the second half that we're doing today.
Oh, we only had half of the chapter before?
No, I gave you the whole chapter before, and now I'm giving the second half to people who weren't here last time.
Oh.
Because that's what we'll be talking about today. Okay, the homework assignment. The first one is to prove that a prime. So if you have a number field k, a prime divides the discriminant of the number field if and only if that prime ramifies in the extension. So we've discussed this, but I've not given a complete proof of this in class. It's pretty easy, for example, when the extension is generated by one element locally at P. But so what I want you to do in the first problem is to figure out why it's true, and instead of giving you a bunch of hints, I want you to either figure it out or to look in a book, because it would be proved in any book on algebraic number theory, and then kind of write up a proof yourself based on what you see. Okay, so you're not cheating if you look in a book, part of the instructions. The second one, so let me explain the second problem, since it's very counterintuitive and many, many people are surprised by it. But here's a group, gal q bar over q. So this is, by definition, the group of all automorphisms of q bar, all field automorphisms of q bar. And it has, well, there's a correct topology to put on it, and there's a wrong topology to put on it, and they're completely different topologies. So first I'll tell you the wrong topology, which is one that you might first guess would be the right topology. So if you have a big group, and it's a profinite limit of finite groups, and in fact this group is a profinite limit of following. For example, you can view this as the inverse limit of the Galois groups of all finite extensions of Q that are Galois. So K finite Galois over Q. So here, over here, I'm just observing that, in fact, this is a profinite group. It's an inverse limit of finite groups. These are all finite. But in complete generality, if you have some infinite group that happens to be a profinite group, it could very well be equal to the inverse limit where you take the inverse limit over all quotients where H is a finite index normal subgroup. So this is something you could do for just an abstract group. You could start with any group at all and consider this inverse limit, and then in some cases you'll have an equality here. And if you do, then you get a topology on G from viewing it this way. So what you do is you give all these finite groups the discrete topology, and then then G would have the topology coming from this. That is to say, you just say the finite index normal subgroups are open subsets. And then you extend that and that gives you a topology on G. But This gives you a basis of neighborhoods for the identity and the extent. But you'll get the wrong topology if you do that on the Galois group of Q bar over Q. So the right topology on Galois Q bar over Q is the one for which the following are open sets. So this is a basis of neighborhoods about the identity element of the group. So you take the set of H contained in the Galois group of, so this is the correct topology. You take the H contained in the Galois group of Q bar over Q such that H is So H is the kernel of a map Gal Q bar. Basically, it's the kernel of the map to one of the finite quotients. So it's the kernel of the map from Gal Q bar over Q to Gal Q bar over K. So you take that set of H's, just write equals. So you take the H that are the kernels of such maps. In other words, H is simply equal to Gal Q bar over K. No, sorry. I wrote this incorrectly. Sorry. Thinking about what I was going to write next. Just like what I wrote there. You have a restriction map because K is a Galois extension, and by Galois theory, that's the same as Galois Q bar over K. So here, K over Q is as usual Galois. So if you take this set of subsets of Gal Q bar over Q, this is a collection of finite index subgroups, and you declare these normal finite index subgroups to be opened. And that gives you a basis of neighborhoods for the identity. Then you take, you translate around, that gives you a topology on Gal Q bar over Q. This topology, though, is completely different than the topology you get by just taking all the finite index normal subgroups. The problem is there are many, many, many finite index normal subgroups of Gal Q bar over Q that are not of this form. And the exercise two, is to use Zorn's lemma to construct, to show that there exists a large number, in fact one at least, but in fact there'll be a large number, show that there is a finite index normal subgroup that's not the kernel of one of these maps. This is not exactly the group that fixes a finite Galois extension. Now you might ask, why is this a good condition to have? Well, one consequence of using this topology is the following. If you have a homomorphism, a continuous homomorphism, from Gal Q bar over Q to some set X, where say X has the discrete topology, and let's say this, well, since it's just a set, it's just a map, so F is a continuous map. So suppose you have a continuous map from Gal Q bar over Q to a discrete set X. The fact that it's continuous means, for example, that if you take the inverse image of a point, well, first this is continuous, so because it's discrete, the inverse image of a point will be an open set. And the open sets, except for the empty set, are exactly these finite index. Well, so the it'll be a little better if I assume it's a homomorphism, so it'll be easier to say. So this is a discrete group. So if you take the kernel that has the inverse image of zero, that's an open subgroup, and certainly has finite index because, the way we define the topology, it's opened, and we define the open sets to be finite index, since they're the kernel of a map to something finite, and if you now take this kernel, which I'll call H, and now consider its fixed field, so you take Q bar fixed by H, call that K. This is a finite Galois extension, by definition, because the topology on Gal cube R over Q is such that the open subgroups are exactly the groups H that are the kernel of a homomorphism like this for some K. And if you take this H, then its fixed field is exactly K. So K here is a finite Gal extension. And now the really nice consequence of this is that this homomorphism factors through Gal Q bar over K. It factors through its kernel. And Gal Q bar over Q modulo H is Gal K over Q. So I wrote this incorrectly. So it factors through the quotient by the kernel, Gal Q bar over Q, Gal K over Q, and then that includes inside of X. And that's really nice because this is just a finite group. So the one sentence summary for what I've just explained to you is that if you choose the topology on Gal Q bar over Q, given by this basis of open neighborhoods of zero of the identity element, then whenever you have an action of the Gal group on something, so if you have a homomorphism from the Gal group to something else, then it factors through the Gal group of a finite extension of a number field. So whenever you have an action on something discrete, then that action factors through an action via the Gal group of a number field. So, for example, this image will be finite automatically just because that's discrete. So that's just motivation for choosing this topology. And this will come back, we'll discuss this further when I talk about representations of the Gal group in more generality a little bit later, which is what I'm going to use to make a transition from algebraic number theory to elliptic curves. So that's just some motivation for problem two. Problem three is to give various examples. These examples should be very easy when you know about various equivalent ways of looking at the decomposition group, which in the next half hour, when I prove some things, you'll be much more familiar with. And problem four is to give is to work through the details of an example of a Gal representation. Sure, I have one left. Can you hand this out? There's a typo in problem four. It says let S3 by the symmetric group, but it's actually be the symmetric group. It was written with an Irish accent or something. Okay, so what we're going to do today is finish chapter 10, which means, here's what we'll do. Recall that if you have a number field K over Q, and you assume that it's Galois, then whenever you have a prime P of the ring of integers of K, you can associate to P the decomposition group of P. The decomposition group is the set of elements of the Galois group of K over Q that fix P. Or leave P in variant. They don't fix the elements of P, but they fix P. And this is a subgroup of the Gal group of K over Q. And the nice thing that happens is that you have an exact sequence which goes, in the middle you have the decomposition group, then there's a map from the decomposition group to the Gal group of the extension of residue class fields. So by that I mean Gal K P over F P. Where here this K equals KP is just OK mod Weierstrass P. And then that's just the finite field of order P here. So you have a map from the decomposition group to this Gal group. We'll prove in a second that it's surjective. It has a kernel which is by definition called the inertia group. And you have this exact sequence. what we'll prove today first is that this exact sequence is in fact exact. That is, just the main thing to prove is that this is surjective. So we'll prove this, and the inertia group is by definition the kernel of this map. One thing we'll prove is that the cardinality of the inertia group is equal to E sub P K over Q. It's the ramification degree of the prime P. So for example, if your prime is unramified, the inertia group is trivial, then you have an isomorphism between the decomposition group and the Galois group of the extension of residue gas fields. And a really neat thing that happens in that situation, well, there's a canonical element of the Galois group of an extension of finite fields, namely Frobenius. This is an extension of FP, so an element of this group of automorphisms is the map that sends x to the p. This is an automorphism called Frobenius, and it generates this Galois group of a finite extension of finite fields. And you can take this particular element, from p, and under the hypothesis that the ramification is 1, which is the case for all the finitely many primes, you can then lift this and you get a canonical element of the decomposition group. So that gives you a way of associating to a prime ideal P of OK a generator for the decomposition group. Also tells us something about the structure of the decomposition group. When there's no ramification, the decomposition group is a cyclic abelian group. OK, so we'll do this first. And once we've done that, I'll tell you how to go from how to associate an L function to a representation of the Galois group of Q bar over Q. So by a representation of the Galois group of Q bar over Q, I mean a homomorphism from Gal Q bar over Q, let's call it rho, to GLN of C, where GLN of C, somewhat surprisingly, we'll equip it with the discrete topology. So C, of course, has a really interesting analytic topology. That's not the topology we'll take here. We'll just take the discrete topology. But this is what a Galois representation is. It's a representation of this group acting on a finite dimensional complex vector space. And I'm writing GLN of C just because I've chosen a basis name. And you can write it as GLN of C. And by what I discussed before, and the fact that we've given this the discrete topology, this in fact factors through a finite extension, the Galois group of a finite extension. That's really what continuous means. So really, to give a Galois representation is the same as giving a number field and an embedding of the Galois group of that number field into a group of n by n matrices over the complex numbers. And you can see an example of that in the last homework problem. But when you've done that, if you take a prime that's unramified in this field K, you can associate to it a Frobenius element, Frob, which will be in the decomposition group of P. And that Frobenius element is hence then an element of this Galois group. And remember the different P lying over some, well, anyways, it's an element of this Galois group. And then you can view it as an element of this matrix group. And then it has a characteristic polynomial. And if you start with a prime P in the integers, then choose a prime P of OK lying over it, the characteristic polynomial of the matrix you get doesn't depend on which prime you choose lying over. So you get, when you have a Galois representation, you get in a systematic way, a whole bunch of characteristic polynomials with entries in the complex numbers. You can combine those together and define a complex analytic function called the L function of rho. So now we're going to dive in a little bit into the details of why this map is surjective, which isn't really very difficult, and a little bit more about the structure of what's going on with the decomposition group, just to give you a better feeling for it. Remember, we're not just doing a bunch of technical stuff for its own sake. We're doing it so that you'll have an understanding of how to associate an L function to a Galois representation. By the way, this L function is defined on some right half plane. It was proven long ago by Artin that it extends to a monomorphic function on the whole complex plane. And it's a famous and still completely open in general problem or conjecture to prove that this can be extended to a function that's entire, except possibly for a pole at s equal to 1. So that's the so-called Artin conjecture. Okay, so now into the details of the decomposition loop. Are there any questions before I dive into that?
What was U again?
So U is just some, it's an open subset of the complex numbers, but in fact you can easily, that for which this function is defined, not just as a meromorphic function. I could write C here, and then I only mean this to be a meromorphic function. It is defined in a completely canonical way on the whole complex numbers by taking values in C union infinity. So that by this I mean that it's meromorphic. So you have this function, I'll even define it for you by the end of this lecture. It's defined by an Euler product involving characteristic polynomials of Frobenius elements, and it meromorphically continues to the whole complex plane, a very old theorem, and the conjecture is that in fact the thing is entire, except possibly for a pole at s equal to 1. You do have a pole sometimes at s equal to 1. For example, if you take this to be the trivial representation, then you end up getting that the L function is essentially the Riemann zeta function, and the Riemann zeta function does have a pole at s equal to 1. So sometimes this function L, which I haven't defined yet, but again, it's just some function that you define where the input is a whole bunch of characteristic polynomials and the output is a meromorphic function. But any other questions? So it's defined on C and it's meromorphic. But one suspects and Artin conjectures, and in some cases various people prove that in fact this thing is entire, except at s equal to 1 sometimes. Okay, so back to the story. I haven't handed that out yet. I don't know if I'll get to this today. Okay, the first thing is, let's figure out what the fixed field of the decomposition group is. So I'm just going to prove a couple of, basically three or four facts about the decomposition group. And if nothing else, this will give you a good sense of the decomposition group. And it will, at the end, just lead up to very easily seeing that this map on the right-hand side is surjective. That is to say, it's sort of surprising. Why are there elements of the Galois group that reduce to give you every single element of the Galois group of the finite field? So the reason I find that surprising, I think it's very surprising. So first, you do have a well-defined map right here. The decomposition group, it sends P into P. So KP is just OK mod P. So you have a well-defined action of automorphisms on the quotient. So you have a well-defined map this way. But why should it be surjective? It's really weird. Why should there be, you have an automorphism here, which is X goes to X to the P, but why should it come from something here? Since X goes to X to the P is very much not an automorphism in characteristic zero. It's really amazing that there is some automorphism in characteristic zero that agrees with it modulo P. But in fact, there always is. And it will just, basically, it'll follow from dimension counting. There will have to be one because there are so many automorphisms anyways. If you have a Galois extension of Q of degree D, then it has automorphism group of size D, because there are D different ways of embedding. And, it's basically, that's the reason that this will work. Okay, the first statement is proposition 10.3.3, and that's a characterization of the fixed field of the decomposition group. And if you want a picture to help you organize what we're proving, look at page 107 in the notes, and there's literally a sketch that I've made, and that picture helps explain what we're proving. So the idea is you have a prime number P, and you have this big field K, And inside of it, you have the fixed field for the full decomposition group. And I'll draw it like this. So you have Q at the bottom, and you have this extension of Q. And this prime P, as we'll see in a second, it splits completely going from Q up to the fixed field of the decomposition group. So a whole bunch of primes lying over. But then once you go up to the fixed field for the decomposition group, nothing more happens. You don't have any more unsplitting. You can have inert or ramified, but nothing else. So that's the picture to keep in mind. There's this canonical subfield of your big Galois extension where your prime splits completely, and then it just doesn't split anymore as you go up farther. You can ramify, but it won't split any further. And that's what I'm proving right now. So in words, the fixed field KD is the smallest subfield L containing K. Everything's taking place inside of K. It's the smallest subfield L of K such that put G on that, the G for this prime such that G for this over G is 1. The other way actually. So GK over that is 1. Where, so remember G is the number of primes lying over your prime. So by this I mean you take, so this is the G for, so the number of primes lying over P intersect OL. Okay, so we have P's up here at the top, one of these primes. Weierstrass P's, or Gothic P is at the top, it's one of these primes, and then you intersect it with L, and you get one of these primes, and the assertion, the claim is that the number of primes here is just 1. Okay, and that fits with the picture. In the picture, the fixed field of the decomposition group, it splits completely and then it doesn't split any further. So what I'm saying is that you can characterize the fixed field of the decomposition group. It's the smallest subfield so that when you go from that field up to the top, there's no further splitting. So all the splitting has to happen at the level of the fixed field of the decomposition group. Yes?
Sorry, this might be like question that like doesn't mean anything, but this is, so what are you adding to K to get from the fixed field to K? Like can you give me an example where KD is not equal to K?
Let me think. Okay, that's not a question for me, it's for the audience. Can somebody think of a, for you guys, can you think of an example where KD is not equal to K?
I mean, you can join some other stupid group.
Yeah, they join a stupid group.
Okay,
but give me an explicit example where KD is not equal to K. Okay? KD is not equal to K. How could you make such a thing?
Take something with ramification?
I don't know. That might or might not work because if KD is if KD is not equal to K, like one way to force that according to the conclusion I have is all you have to do is make some splitting. As long as there's some splitting, then KD can equal K. Because when you go from KD to K, there's no additional splitting. So that's a hint. You can give me any extension, K, and any prime that splits in it, then there'll have to be, as long as KD isn't equal to K, there'll have to be some additional. So give me an example. You have any number field at all, and any prime that splits in that number field.
Okay.
All right. So our field is 2 adjoined square root of 2, and what's the prime?
11.
11. Jeez. Huge. Okay. So we have the prime 11, and you claim that this splits in that field, and that's because x squared minus 2 factors mod 11, presumably.
Yeah.
So it doesn't. Says there.
No, it uses 11 to 3 by 8.
Okay.
P,
how about
like
a smaller
17?
17? 7? Does that have a root? If you take this polynomial mod 7,
then you get x plus 3f3 and find it.
3 squared. Yeah, okay, 3 works. Okay, so this factor, so this prime splits as into 2 primes, p1 and p2. Okay, so there's a decomposition group somewhere. Let's choose this prime, p1, and this has Galois group, which is generated by one thing, so it has order 2. I'll say it's the group 1 and sigma. And the decomposition group associated to p1, it's a subgroup. What subgroup is it? So remember, tell me.
Identity.
What?
Identity.
Right. Why is that?
Because the other one sends it to you. Because the
right.
Galois group is a transitive.
Right. There are only two possibilities. It's either the trivial group or the whole thing. We know that we proved last time the Galois group act transitively on the primes. And so the non-trivial thing has to send, sigma has to send p1 to p2. I mean, you could just look at it explicitly with numbers, but you don't need to. So the only thing that could possibly fix p1 is just the identity group. Okay, so now the fixed field for the decomposition group is k. And k is not equal to q. So in this picture over here, these two are the same. Yeah, these two are the same. So that's not an example where kd is not equal to k. But it's an example where kd is not equal to q. But you want an example where kd is not equal to k, right?
Yeah, so if we join some other...
we could just try a prime which is inert.
Yeah.
Then what happens? Just in exactly this field. Try a prime that's inert. So then the picture is going to be... First, I don't know, what's an example of an inert prime? That is a prime that doesn't split.
11?
Okay, yeah, that's... yeah, I just had to avoid that before. Okay, and then we have our prime p. What's the decomposition group for this prime? What fixes this prime? Everything, because... yeah, everything. Because after all, there's only one prime here, so no condition at all to fix it. So you have the whole thing. Now the fixed field for the decomposition group is, in this case, q. So here we have that these two are the same. Kd is equal to q, and you have kind of the top half only. This just gets squashed down. But in this case, kd is not equal to k. K is a quadratic extension. Kd is just equal to q. Okay, so that's examples of both functions.
That's how.
Yeah, but if you have any Galois extension at all of Q and any prime P, then this is the picture. It looks like this. Take the fixed field for the decomposition group, and just like you saw in each of these two examples, there's no splitting at all going from here to here, and you have all the splitting at the bottom. Okay, the proof isn't difficult. So, let's see. All right, so here's how you do it, proof. So there are two directions. First, we'll prove that the fixed field of the decomposition group has this property. So first, suppose that L is the fixed field for the decomposition group. And so our picture is that we have the fixed field for the decomposition group, and then we have L. Here's what's going on down there. And by Galois theory, you know what the group of this extension is. It's just dP. And we have our prime Gothic P up here, and then we have the prime P intersect O. Whoops. Sorry, that should be canceled. P intersect OL, where L is this bottom thing, down here, and there might be other primes we don't know yet. However, we do know that the Galois group of an extension acts transitively on the set of primes lying over a prime here. So we only very carefully prove that in class
in the case when the base field is Q, but we discussed the fact that it in fact works for a relative extension. So this decomposition group acts transitively on the set of primes up here. On the other hand, this decomposition group by definition is exactly the thing that fixes P. So there can be only one prime up here. So that proves that in this picture, if you take the fixed field of the decomposition group, the primes don't split any further. They can't, because the Galois group right here is D, and D fixes P. So really, you can just focus on one of them for this. Okay, so that's half of this. The other thing is that if you had a smaller field, you have to show there is some splitting behavior. So next, suppose you have a field so that G equals 1, so there's no additional splitting. Right, so if you had, I'm just going to erase this, now we have just a completely general L here. So the picture is the same, but now we have only one prime up here. And our assumption is that G equals 1. The fact that G equals 1 means that every element of the Galois group of this relative extension fixes P. Yes?
So D is indexed by Gothic P, right?
Yes.
So in the picture, how come you can treat all of the Gothic
Ps?
Well,
you do it for just one, and then we had a general fact which said that when you have an extension, the Gs for all the conjugate Ps and the Es and the Fs are all identical for any relative extension. So it's a very good point, and that's using what we proved before. Okay? That totally answers your question? So really, I'm only proving it here, but we already proved that the behavior in a Galois extension is the same for everything. Except there's a hole in that logic, which is that this extension need not be Galois over Q. So, but it is, so K over KD
is
Galois.
It is a subset of a Galois.
It is a subset of Galois, but that, so what's Galois is K over KD. So the G's for K over KD for the conjugates are all the same. So in fact, I'm a little worried about what I just said. Well, I mean, I haven't claimed this picture yet. All I've claimed is that when you go from KD up to K, your one prime, P intersect the ring of integers of KD, this doesn't split any further. That's all I've claimed, and that's all I've proved. And I'll discuss additional features about this diagram as we go, okay? So I think the argument I just gave you that they're all the same doesn't quite work, because KD need not be a Galois extension of Q. It is certainly the case that K is Galois over any intermediate field, but you have to be careful because KD need not be Galois over Q. So partially what I said applies, but it doesn't apply completely. Okay. Right, so to finish this argument, if you have any intermediate field L and there's no additional splitting, that means that, well, the Galois group of this extension is equal to so we're assuming G equals 1, there's no additional splitting, and that means that the entire Galois group of this extension fixes P, because there's only one prime T there. And that means it's contained in the decomposition group, which means that L, which is the fixed field of this Galois of the group of this Galois extension, L, its corresponding H, is contained in the decomposition group. And because you have this inclusion-reversing correspondence between subgroups of the Galois group and intermediate fields, that means that L contains K dP. So now we've shown that this is the smallest field, this decomposition group is the smallest field with this property, that there's no additional splitting. It's done, okay? Right now, this is the goal to keep in mind, getting this picture. Alright, the next proposition gives us some numbers that we'll very carefully deduce that will help us to see the extent to which this claimed picture is true. Alright, so what does this say? This is proposition 10.3.4. And again, the notation's the same. We have a prime of k lying over a prime of q. And d is the decomposition group of this prime. So we haven't changed any notation at all. And we're just, for notational purposes, setting L equal to the fixed field of the decomposition group, just like we had before. And now, what I'm going to prove is that the ramification of this prime here from L to Q is equal to 1. So there's no ramification here. So the way I'll denote that is E equals 1. So my first claim is that E L over Q equals 1. So in this picture, when you start with your prime here, and then you go up to here, this particular prime, P intersect OKD, this is not ramified over P. So that's what the claim is. So very precisely, kind of extend the notation a little, E sub Weierstrass P intersect L over little p of L over Q is equal to 1. There's no ramification as you go up to the fixed field of the decomposition group. All the ramification is going to happen here. So it's kind of nice. If you have an extension, a Galois extension, and you fix a prime at the top, you can find this canonical subfield where there's no ramification, and then you'll get only additional ramification afterwards. So that's the first part of the claim. The second is the same thing about the residue class degree. It's exactly the same statement. That should be O. P intersect OL over P. So here what I'm saying is that if you take the residue class field for this prime ideal, that is OL mod Weierstrass P intersect OL, then that will just be equal to FP. You don't have any residue class degree. All the residue class degree is at the top. The only thing you're going to have going from little p up to P intersect OL is splitting. So those are the first two claims, which we haven't proved yet. And let's see, G over P intersect OL over little p. This is equal to the degree of the extension. And this is not obvious because, again, L is not a Galois extension in general of Q. Because D need not be normal. So there it could very well not be Galois. But amazingly enough, the number of primes lying over little p, so I guess this part of the notation isn't needed, but this number is equal to the degree of the extension. And then, let's see what else. The other things are that the ramification, so this is now easy, the ramification of the prime over Q, so whole way up is the same as the ramification from Q down to L. So all that says is that all of the ramification occurs going from here to here in this part of the tower. So the notation again that I'm using is E and then the prime and then the prime it's over and then the extension of fields. It's a redundant notation because you don't need sort of everything here. Since the extension of fields would determine this, you just need some part of the notation. So you have equality here, the same thing with the Fs. fk over q for r prime is equal to fk over l. All the inertia class degree, all the extension of residue class fields, that all takes place here. And let's see, anything else? Yeah, okay, so let's, I guess the final thing is that g k over q is equal to the degree of L over Q. Okay, so now let's prove this so that we can understand it better. So all I'm doing is taking this picture and making some claims about the extent to which various primes split and what behavior they have. And the so for example, the number of primes is the degree. This is really amazing because, I mean, why should that be the case? It wouldn't be so surprising if this were Galois, but you know, Galois. So let's prove it. Okay, so here's the proof. We're going to use the orbit stabilizer theorem, and that tells us that the number of primes up here, the orbit, the size of the orbit is equal to so orbit times stabilizer. Well, so what do you get out of it? You get that gk over q, number of primes, is equal to the index of the stabilizer in the group. Here g is the Galois group of k over q. So this is the orbit stabilizer theorem. It tells us the number of things up here in terms of the index of the decomposition group inside of G. And really, the application of orbit stabilizer here is the one sort of useful trick to get the rest to fall out. This proof is very hard if you forget about the orbit stabilizer theorem. So this is from the orbit stabilizer theorem. And once we have this, this is kind of the latch which allows everything else to fall out. Last year when I gave this class, I tried to prove the whole thing without using this, and it was much, much more difficult. So this is an easy way to go. So this is just saying that this is just a orbit stabilizer. Let's see. The stabilizer of the prime is d, and this says that the index of the stabilizer in the full group is the size of the orbit. So now that we have that, things are going to be very easy. So now it's just a formality. Okay, so first, Galois theory tells us that the degree of the index here is the degree of the extension L over Q. Okay, so we just proved that G, the number of primes, is the same as the degree of L over Q. That tells us that here, the number of primes is really the same as the degree of this bottom extension. Despite the fact that that might not be a Galois extension, we now know that the number of primes appearing here is the same as the degree. So this 4 is the same as the degree. These dots, that's the same as the degree. The number of primes is the degree. Because we already know that you have no... I better be clear. The number of dots at the top, we proved, is the same as the degree. Okay, so that's the first thing. GQ over L equals 1. GQ over L equals 1, why is that? That should fall immediately from this.
Because no matter how many primes we have downstairs,
mm-hmm.
have this many upstairs too, because no splitting.
Well, okay. What all I've proved so far is the number of primes upstairs is the degree of L over Q. And over here I prove that there's no additional splitting going from L up to K. And we know that
multiplicity in towers.
Yeah, multiplicity in towers, that's the trick. G GL over Q is GL over K. Sorry. GK over Q is GK over L times GL over Q. And we know that nothing happens here, right? We prove that this is 1. And we know what this is, we know what this is on the left-hand side. This is the degree. This is the degree of L over Q. So we just proved that G L over Q is equal to the degree of L over Q. Okay. So actually, it gives the other part of the claim. Yes.
How do you know that? That from
the multiplicativity in towers. The multiplicativity in towers formula. I think we did that before.
So why is it true that every prime splits into the same number? Like any prime lying about?
Because they all split into 1.
Because of transitivity, transitive action of the Kalman group.
Oh, okay.
And
right.
So you take the factorization and let it act on it.
Well, one thing we just did, so if you believe this product formula, which is
right.
True, and I believe we did it already, then this G, this is the total number of primes at the top of the board, which is what we just proved that's the degree of L over Q. And that's this product. And we know that G, we know that GK over L, we proved that that's equal to 1. There's no splitting going from here to here. So we have 1 times this. Therefore, the number of primes lying over P down at the very bottom is the degree of L over Q. That means that you have splitting completely here. So the number of primes here is the same as the number of primes here, and that means that you can't have any, that means the picture really has to look like this, where you have a prime. If you had any additional splitting, see, I mean, you can't have a prime disappear. You always have either that prime or more primes, and the fact is the number of primes up here is the same as the number of primes here, so it has to be like this, like it's indicated in the picture. Okay? Does that answer your question at all? No? Okay, yes.
Well, when you write it that way, it looks like you're not differentiating between the different...
That's a good point. I have to be careful about that.
I mean, I think it only works because you've already proved that there's 1 for each of them. So you can combine
terms. Let me see. So here it's Galois, so I don't have to differentiate. Here it's Galois, so I don't have to differentiate. Here, you do have to differentiate, right? This is the only field that might not be Galois, L over Q. However, what we're doing is we're seeing that they're all the same because these two things don't depend on which prime you choose. This one might, but it's in a formula, so it can't. You have this multiplicativity no matter which one you choose. So this doesn't depend on which prime you choose here or at the top. This one doesn't depend. In each case, these two don't depend because this K is a Galois extension. This isn't a Galois extension, but it appears in this formula as a quotient of these other two things. Therefore, the G doesn't depend on which prime you choose over here. Is that what you just explained? Okay. Thank you. Okay, so we really do have this picture, I think, at this point. So let's see, what have we done so far regarding all these claimed statements over here? We've proved the bottom one. Computed the GK over Q. I guess we did that right here. We also now know GL over Q, which is this. And let's see what else we can get. Okay, so now there's an additional trick we're going to use to get the other formulas. So GK over L is 1. So now let's use the EFG equals 1 for a Galois, or equals the degree of the extension for a Galois extension. So we have a Galois extension K over L. We have that E times F times G for a Galois extension is equal to the degree of the extension. So this is E K over L times F K over L times G K over L, because K is Galois. But we just proved that GK over L is 1. We prove that way over here again. Therefore, E times F is equal to this degree K over L. Now, there's a way to rewrite this. which is rewrite the degree k over L as the degree k over Q divided by the degree of L over Q. And now, again, k is Galois over Q. So again, we have the EFG, but for k over Q. So here on the top, we have EK over Q. And again, it doesn't matter which prime I choose because k is Galois. The only time it would ever matter which prime I choose, Gothic P, or where's Gothic P or another one, is when I write the G, E or F, and L is at the top. So I have E times F times G here. And on the bottom, I have the degree of L over Q, which I'll just leave as it is. Now I have a cancellation. We know that GK over Q is equal to the degree of L over Q. That was this orbit stabilizer business. So pow, pow, cancellation. And now we're going to use the towers. I mean, we're using a lot of stuff in this. So look what we have. We've proved equality of the product EK over L times FK over L with EK over Q, FK over Q. But EK over Q is EK over L times EL over Q, and FK over Q is FK over L times FL over Q. So the only possibility, since this one is this one is a divisor of that one, and this one is a divisor of that one, is that you have to have equality of E with the other E and F with the other F. So that proves this and that.
Can you say again why you have to use equality of minus?
Okay, so in complete generality, suppose you have two numbers, I'll call them E and F, and then two other numbers, E prime and F prime, and suppose that they're equal, which is the picture here, right? Then assume in addition that E divides E prime and F divides F prime. Then that implies that E equals E prime and F equals F prime. Because if at any point, if for either of these you didn't have equality, then you wouldn't have equality up here.
I mean, oh, and we have that they divide, sorry.
Okay. Exactly, we have that they divide. And we do have the divisibility. The divisibility, again, comes from this multiplicativity of the E, F, and G in towers. So, let's see. So.
Well, you're done now, aren't you?
I think I am, yeah.
Because the top two are just what you just proved.
Yeah, exactly. The top two say that the factor that appears in the divisibility, you know, that E prime divided by E is 1, and the F prime divided by F is 1. So I also have these two. I now prove this proposition, and also this picture should now be pretty clear given the proposition. So is there any question about the picture? What does the picture say relative to the proposition? So the picture, for example, says that the G should always be 1 here, and we did prove that. G for K over KD or L over, for K over L, let's see it here. Oh, that was over here, sorry. The G for K over L is 1, but we only did that for one of the primes, but again, we saw in the course of the proof that you can't have any additional splitting going from here up because the number of primes here was the same as the number of primes here. So really, the G's have to be equal to 1 all the way across when you go like this. Yes?
I think G should just be indexed by B and not Gothic P intersect OL because isn't it just how many primes P splits into?
Yeah.
And likewise, what I was saying about the...
I can just put
what you
here. Right, with L over Q. Nonetheless, it still requires an argument. So, this picture says that if you take this prime, there's no additional splitting up here. Take that prime, there's no additional splitting. There are sort of different statements, and they don't follow just from the Galois property of K over Q. You really need something extra, which we did prove. So the picture really does look like this. Let's see, is there anything in these equations that isn't really clear from the picture? So, by the picture, when I at the bottom, I mean, this is all just splitting. There's no ramification. There's no inertia here. This is all splitting, splitting completely. So when you want to remember this complicated collection of equations plus this statement over here, you don't have to remember any of that. All you have to do is remember this picture. Okay? That's it. I think they're saying exactly the same thing. But think about it for like 30 seconds and see if there's anything in the formulas that's not in the picture. And if so, think of how we could integrate it into the picture.
Question?
Yes?
Is it true that the group of automorphisms of L over Q is transitive?
Watch out, because remember that extension might not be Galois.
Yes, might not
at all.
It's kind of
special. But you could take the subset of the, I mean, you could take the group of actual automorphisms. I doubt it. I don't know, actually. So, I don't know, actually.
Maybe you're asking, is it transitive?
Yes,
it's
transitive. Because the Galois group matches with the number of the elements of the Galois group matches with the number of the primes.
Wait, but if it were transitive, then it would be Galois, wouldn't it?
Right.
Because you would have to have the right number of them.
You're right. Very, very, very good point. Very good. Both of you. Do you get their argument? Somebody explain what you just said very clearly. Allison?
Yes. So, I mean, if the group isn't Galois, that means that you have, like, less than the degree number of automorphisms, but you have the same number of primes as the degree of the extension, so you can't have transitivity because there aren't enough automorphisms to go around.
So, for the third time, if this extension were Galois, if the automorphisms of L act transitively, you know there have to be at least the degree of this extension automorphisms. Therefore, the extension would have to be Galois. And though we haven't seen a single example yet, I claim that there do exist examples where this D is not a normal subgroup of the Galois group. Here's a reason why you should expect that would be the case most of the time. Take a random extension of Q. It has Galois group Sn with n, say, bigger than 2. So you take a random extension as Galois group Sn. Take a prime that doesn't ramify in that extension. Most primes don't. All but finitely many don't ramify. Now, as we're going to see in just a second, the decomposition group is a cyclic group. So it's very unlikely that a cyclic subgroup of Sn is Galois. In fact, that's not going to happen very often. Most subgroups of Sn are not. When I say Galois, I meant normal. It's very unlikely a normal subgroup of Sn would be cyclic. That's true. It's very unlikely a cyclic subgroup of Sn will be normal. Also very unlikely a normal subgroup will be cyclic. Because pretty much the only normal subgroup is An, and it's not cyclic, except when N equals 3. So most of the time, if you think about kind of the generic case, this D is a cyclic group, and when you take the fixed field, you're going to get some subfield that's not Galois, since you're not taking the fixed field by a normal subgroup. Yes?
So earlier, what were we trying to do earlier? Find something such that K is not equal to KD?
We found examples of where K is not equal to KD, and where K does equal KD. We found examples like that.
Okay.
Yeah, but the first question was find an example where K is not equal to KD.
Right, so it would have
supposed to
be something ramified, right? Because you want EF to be.
Yeah, that would have definitely worked. Anytime you have ramification, that will force, because of this exact sequence, the D to be non-trivial. Anytime the D is non-trivial, K is not equal to KD. All right, so let me, I'm dragging it out too long, we better prove that this map is surjective. So that will be the next thing. So the next section of the notes is just some facts about Galois groups of finite fields, and I'll just assume you know them. The Galois group of finite extension of finite fields is cyclic, generated by Frobenius. The proof got accidentally deleted from my copy of the notes, but I'm sure you've seen that sort of thing before. You figure out what the order of Frobenius is, and it's the same as the degree of the extension. Therefore, it has to be a generator of the Galois group of the extension of finite fields. Okay, so let's prove this map phi is surjective. So phi is surjective. By phi, I mean the reduction map. All right, so here's what we do. First, as I just mentioned, the Galois group of K over FP. This is a cyclic group, and it's generated by Frob P, which is by definition the automorphism that sends x to the power of P. And we have a homomorphism from the Galois group of, well, not the Galois group, the subgroup of the Galois group, which is DP to this called phi. We want to show it's surjective. So what you do is you write k as fp adjoin a single element a, and in fact I'll write it as a tilde, where a tilde is the reduction modulo Weierstrass modulo Gothic p of an element of the ring of integers of k. So here a ok. Since everything in little k is the reduction of something in OK, you can make such a choice. And this Frob automorphism is Frob P A tilde is equal to A tilde to the power of P. So all we have to do is show that there's some automorphism of in the decomposition group, so an automorphism of K in the decomposition group that when you reduce it, it sends A tilde to A tilde the P. And then we'll have shown that this is surjective because we'll show that the generator, Frob P, is in the image. So that's our strategy. And then the strategy for doing that is to think about the characteristic polynomial of A, and we're going to reduce it and see that we get the minimal polynomial of A tilde. And we'll be able to see by some very simple degree observation that the statement we want is true. So here we go. Okay, so let F, which is the following product, sigma in the decomposition group DP, X minus sigma of A. So this is an element of the fixed field for the decomposition group adjoin X. This is the characteristic polynomial of A viewed as an element of K, and it's the characteristic polynomial over this fixed field. So remember, that's a finite Galois extension. Its Galois group is DP, and so the characteristic polynomial is the product of X minus each conjugate. The conjugates are exactly the images of A via each of the automorphisms in the Galois group. Now, we know what the degree of this polynomial is because we know the degree of that extension. So the degree, what is the degree of F? So what is the degree of K over KP? So let's see, first you split into, well, maybe.
That's just the size of D, which is E of the prime times F of the prime.
Okay, I like that. It's E.
It's
actually just
letter.
F of the, yeah, okay.
It's one.
Sure, it's E of the prime times F of the prime.
Oh, yeah, we're taking, we're taking D1.
Sure, E, K over L, K over Q, over Q. Yeah.
Either way.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Okay. So, anyways, we have our polynomial. And now let's just reduce the thing. So you take it and reduce it modulo P. So you have tilde. And this is simply the product of X minus sigma A tilde, the reductions of each of the factors. And that's an element of So here, what we're doing is we're reducing the ring of integers of this modulo p intersect that ring of integers. And here we're going to use the fact that little p splits completely going from q up to this field. So we know that, in fact, when you reduce this polynomial, you get an element of fp adjoint x. Okay? So that's because, again, that's because g kd over q is equal to the degree of kd over q. There's no addition, the thing splits completely going up to kd. So when you reduce, so, let's see, actually,
more directly
I mean, that, you're right, it's more directly because f is equal to 1, f kd over q. This is by definition the degree of the extension, this is equal to 1. The degree of the extension of residue across fields is 1, and this is an element, when you reduce it, it's a polynomial whose entries lie in the residue class field. And the degree of the residue class field is 1, because if you look over here, it's 1. Okay? I pointed out the e, but for f, it's 1. Okay, so now we're almost done. So this is a polynomial. It has you know, these roots, but it happens to be in here. And its degree, it's this. I say its degree is. But it doesn't matter. So actually, I think the argument I have in here is not quite right, because I claim that this is the minimal polynomial of A tilde, but that's wrong. This could be a power of the minimal polynomial of A tilde. But the argument is easily modified to work with this power of the minimal polynomial of A tilde. So this is a polynomial in fp of x that has A tilde as a root. Therefore, it's divisible by the minimal polynomial of A tilde. Right? Because the min poly of A tilde is, by definition, the generator of the ideal generated by all polynomials that are satisfied by A tilde. That means if you take any conjugate of A tilde, that is any of the roots of the minimal polynomial of A tilde, they have to also be roots of this. That means they're of the form sigma of A tilde. They're the reduction of sigma of A something. In particular, the factor x minus A tilde to the power of p, that's a divisor of the min poly, so I'll put it right here. It divides the min poly. Therefore, it divides this product. Therefore, it is one of these factors, because this is a complete factorization. So x minus, well, so A tilde to the power of p is equal to sigma of A tilde for some sigma in the decomposition group. And that means that Frobenius is the image of sigma under this reduction map. Pretty cool. Sigma such that sigma maps to Frob P. And the proof again, you take the Kerr poly of something that reduces to a generator, you reduce that characteristic polynomial, and you note that x minus A tilde to the power of P, that polynomial divides your product, hence it's one of the factors, hence you have equality. Okay? So now we've proved that you have surjectivity. Everything comes from something. So you have an exact sequence like this because IP is by definition the kernel. Okay, the one last thing to finish off with is the fact that the cardinality of IP is the ramification degree. And that's pretty straightforward given what's on the board right now. Once we have that, we've really finished everything about this. So from the sequence, what do you have? You have that the sequence implies that, I'm going to prove this statement right here. Proof. We have that the decomposition group has cardinality equal to the cardinality of the inertia group times the cardinality of this Galois group, which is exactly the residue class degree, times F K over Q. So that's what we get immediately from the exact sequence, so really from definition of IP. So now that means that IP has cardinality dP divided by F, and dP has cardinality given, well, it's the degree of K over L, or the degree of K over the fixed field, so let's just use what we have already. So this dP has cardinality degree of K over L by Galois theory, and that's the degree of K over Q divided by G. The degree of K over Q is E times F times G divided by G, which is E times, this is E times F. So on the one hand, we have the product of the cardinality of the inertia group and F, but that's equal to the product of the ramification times F. Canceling the Fs, you see that the ramification number E is equal to the cardinality of the inertia group. So now we suddenly have a much better invariant to measure how much ramification occurs. Instead of just a number E, you have this group, the inertia group. And in fact, this group can be extraordinarily complicated in general. And there's even higher ramification groups. This is just the first one. So not only can you define this, but you can define a whole whole descendant sequence of inertia groups. And they give you very, very fine structure that measures ramification. And ramification, as the name suggests, somehow it's where the interesting stuff happens often. Even though there are only finitely many ramified primes, carefully understanding ramification is usually the key input to much of number theory. So, but it's kind of neat, kind of out of this, in a natural way, just appeared this definition. The inertia group is the kernel of this map, and this is a finer invariant of ramification. It measures more precisely how a prime ramifies. Yes?
I seem to remember that, and you demonstrated some of the, I think, factorization and related things in Perry that showed some of these numbers. Which ones does that output? The output's still kind of...
I think it just outputs E and F.
Okay.
So the extra numbers were E and F. Okay, so there's one other statement here, which is that the inertia group is exactly the set of elements of G that send, that act as, act as the identity mod P. So the inertia group here is by definition the group of elements in the decomposition group that act as the identity mod P because of the kernel. In fact, by a little trick, you can see that the inertia group is the collection of elements in the full Galois group that act as the identity mod P. Where acting as the identity doesn't even really make sense, mod P, but you can write the equation IP equals, it's the set of sigma in the full Galois group such that you have the following equality, sigma of A is congruent A mod P for all A in OK. So, I mean, all you have to do is, so for elements of DP, this is just by definition. For something that isn't in DP, you show that this just doesn't happen for every A. That's all there's to. And I'm not going to give you the proof of that. But, by the way, the higher ramification groups, the definition isn't too hard. You just replace P by a power of P. If you require this congruence mod P squared, you have something that's a little bit more refined than the ramification group. You have something a little bit smaller, you're making a stronger condition. Then you get this, that gives you another ramification group. And it's a subgroup of the first one, which might be denoted maybe with a 1, I forget. And then you can do it with P cubed, and then you get another ramification group. You get a whole sequence of these. And these are important in defining conductors and so on. Okay, so I'm actually completely out of time, but it is a good time to stop. So first thing next time, I'll elaborate a little bit on what I said about Galois representations and precisely define the L function of a Galois representation. Then I'll define L functions attached to elliptic curves, And I'll give kind of a general overview about elliptic curves and what we're going to do with them. Before you leave, I have a handout which is a list of ideas for your projects, since you'll have to do projects, and also the due date, which is May 18th. If the due date doesn't work for you, you can turn in your project earlier. What?
Star Wars Day.
What day is the week is that?
Or is it May 19th?
It's the last day of reading week, actually.
So finish your, is that a Friday? Or?
No, I think it's
Saturday.
Not a Friday.
May 18th.
But just plan to turn your project in earlier.
Okay.
You should just plan to turn your project in a little bit earlier than that. Classes end 2 weeks before then, so. And you should start working on your project really soon. So this is just a whole bunch of ideas for projects. And you can do something that isn't on this list if you want, or you could do something on this list. But you should think about this, and on Thursday come back, and maybe at the beginning or end of class, we'll discuss your ideas for projects. But there are a whole bunch of different things here. Like, you could write up something about an algorithm, you could talk about Galois representations more, or you could research an open problem. Like, remember a long time ago I told you it's a conjecture that there are infinitely many number fields of class number one. Dive into the literature, see what's known, write something up about that, try to prove it, I don't know. Also, I'm writing a computer algebra system that a lot of documentation is needed for. You can help me with that. Be part of an open source project that will be very important in the long run. That could be your project. There are a lot of possibilities. So, and you can talk to me right now if you have any ideas for a project and don't have to run off.
Dude, I like every disease
in
old time. I do too. Look at my eyes.
The minimal polynomial.
I know.
So the minimal polynomial is the product of the differences of.
They should work in a band with those sick guys.
So first, A tilde is conjugate to A tilde. And the minimal polynomial A tilde is the product of X minus A tilde conjugate. So that's what you have. It's just, think of this as being the product of the difference of x minus one of the roots. I mean, x minus one of the conjugates, x minus the other conjugates, and so on. Okay. So you get that divisibility, and that gives that divisibility. But then we know all these factors are. So we know this factor is actually equal to that factor for one of these. Yeah, it is.
I'm Walking Dead.
Is it Walking Dead? Are you tired?
It's kind of sick, and like my eyes are just the reddest thing ever.
Yeah.
Oh, sure.